the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
740, Senator Durbin. Been a while since the Senator's been on the show. Nice to have you back, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, but we're the third week of the baseball season, and they're postponing games for snow. I mean, what is going on,
What's
Steve?
The spring been like in Washington? Have you had a weird one, too?
A weird one. Boy, some days it'll get up to 60 and then back down to 30. So, the cherry blossoms have managed to survive most of this, but it's been a rough beginning.
Yeah, we had 60, I think, last October. Winter is now holding on, but Skilling promises it'll end by this weekend. Hey, you were talking about this open textbooks situation. The fact that private colleges are getting away with what they're getting away with is murder, but one of the highest costs that parents may not realize if you got a high schooler graduating soon is the cost of textbooks. So what is this and what does it do?
Well, it turns out, you're right, it turns out to be an expense that people don't talk about. Well, what's the tuition rate? Well, that's all very important. But, you know, students can spend over $1,000 on books in a year. It's not unusual. They have to borrow money to do it. And we live in a world of Amazon and a world of Kindle. And here we are with these basically primitive approaches to textbooks and a take-it-or-leave-it by many professors and universities. So what I'm trying to do is to drag these universities kicking and screaming into the 21st century. These young people, when they're going after books, know that it's going to be on their iPads or the tablets, whatever it happens to be. So we put some money into incentivizing schools to create basic textbooks for many of their courses to give the students a break and reduce the cost of college.
Senator, I wanted to jump right in and ask you about the opioid crisis. I know 2 weeks ago you were in Rockford holding a roundtable discussion on this. Where are we? Where do we go? And are we making progress under this administration?
No, very slowly. We had to fight for $3 billion in the omnibus bill, which to most of your listeners sounds like a lot of money. By federal standards, is small change. But $3 billion for the worst drug epidemic we've seen in our nation's history. And it starts with pharma. The pharmaceutical companies produce 14 billion opioid pills a year in the United States. 14 billion is enough opioids for every adult in America to have a 3-week prescription, every one of us. And you think to yourself, why in the world are they flooding the market with these opioid pills? Next up, doctors, dentists, nurse practitioners writing the scripts for these opioid pills. You know, they're basic standards, and they're very, very sick and people in pain who need more than most, but they overwrite the prescriptions. So there are too many of these pills floating out there. They become too expensive, and people move to the cheaper form of addiction of heroin, and that leads to fentanyl, that leads to death. It is a horrible epidemic, and we don't have enough treatment centers. We are not dealing with this honestly, and we're not holding those responsible accountable for what they're doing.
Big pharma lobby too big to fix this immediately?
That is one of the problems, Steve. You know, they are one of the big powerhouses on Capitol Hill here. I just read an article this morning in the paper that talked about one of the therapies they've come up with to deal with cancer. Well, they've discovered that it takes fewer pills than originally thought for the therapy to work. So what did the pharmaceutical company do? It dramatically increased the cost of the pills. So they continue to have people paying over $1,000 a day for the treatment. You know, it's just not an industry that is well regulated. The president's biggest applause line, bipartisan applause line, I'm going to take on these drug companies for what they're charging.
Yeah, so do it.
For an indication of what he might do. I hope he will.
Yeah, step up. You are one of the folks that has to decide if Mike Pompeo is going to be able to move from CIA to Secretary of State. Were you surprised about this North Korea meeting, or was that a rumor?
Oh, I was totally surprised. Pompeo came by the office yesterday, and I said to him, should I put Pyongyang, the North Korean capital, on my list of vacation destinations? He said, not quite yet. So it was a surprise meeting and an important and valuable meeting. Let me say that. I think dialogue, particularly when you're dealing with a 33-year-old dictator who's starving his people so he can build nuclear weapons, more dialogue is certainly in order. So I salute Pompeo for doing that. I really worry, to be very blunt with you, I worry about a meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump and what might happen. Two volatile personalities, President Trump, with limited experience, who doesn't like to read memos that prepare him for meetings. And here we have at stake the future of the Korean Peninsula and maybe another war. So I think the dialogue was important, but we have a long way to go before I think we have this resolved.
Yeah, I don't want to be petty here, but we've already given the huge benefit to Kim Jong-un that he is going to get this meeting without really anything in return. Why are we talking about doing this at the DMZ? Let him get on a plane and fly here.
Yeah, it's tricky, and I'll tell you what it comes down to. I think Kim Jong-un is reluctant to let the people of his country know he's leaving for any period of time. He did not, the only time he's left his country since he took over was to go to China. He did not announce
and he took his secret choo-choo train. But there are risks.
You know why? He's afraid they're going to overthrow him if he leaves the country. I mean, and that's why he's a little nervous about where this is going to take place. The actual location of it is not as important to me as whether or not it finally calms down the situation.
Well, sure.
We live in a dangerous world, and this man has the capacity to develop a nuclear warhead that can reach the United States.
It just seems like we're going, what else do you need, Kim? What else do you need?
Well, I'm going to bend in the direction of dialogue. I'd rather see that than people, you know, squaring off with nuclear missiles pointed at one.
No, I'm not, no disagreement, but I think both are relevant. We throw a bunch of missiles into Syria with good reason. What did we accomplish?
Well, I don't know. The honest answer is whether Assad will ever use chemical weapons again. I don't think we destroyed his capability. I support, frankly, what President Trump did.
Yeah.
And many people may be surprised to hear it. But I told President Obama the same thing when he called me 3 years ago at home on a Sunday night and said, I need your vote. They use chemical weapons, and I want to nail him and try to knock out the resources for more chemical attacks. I said, I'll support you. You know, I know we don't have a declaration of war there, but if you go through the regular congressional process to get approval, I'm with you. Well, we went through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We got a bipartisan vote. I joined with the president. We couldn't get it passed on the floor, and it stopped there. This president, Trump, said, I want to, you know, make this hit. He at least advised us in advance it was coming, and it appears he doesn't have any further plans for further attacks. We don't have a plan for Syria. Let's be honest about it. But I think this is warranted. People who use chemical weapons have to know there's a price to pay.
Senator, I know you're an avid reader. Have you read the Comey book, or do you plan to?
I haven't read it yet. You know, it's kind of funny. I like reading history books, and sometimes these contemporary barn burner books, I kind of look for the summaries of them, having lived through some of these. And I would say, you know, I have mixed feelings about Comey. I think what he did at the end of the campaign, we're going to investigate Hillary Clinton. No, we aren't. It may have cost her the presidency, to be very blunt with you. And I don't think he ever should have said that one way or the other. But I do think he was doing a decent job otherwise. He should not have been fired. And I think some of the things he said about President Trump are really reflections on what the man is like behind closed doors. I've seen it myself. So the American people have a right to know that part of it.
Speaking of the president, the sanctions against Russia, Nikki Haley, who I think bipartisan agreement that Nikki Haley is a pretty strong force in the UN, says on Sunday morning television, look out, here come more sanctions, Russia. Monday, sanctions are pulled. Washington Post, New York Times reporting, pulled specifically by the president, which takes us right back to why is he so afraid to stand up to Putin and why is he protecting him? Having said all that, what can be done about it?
Well, let me say this. It may surprise some of your listeners. I voted for Nikki Haley to be UN ambassador.
Right.
After sitting down with her, I thought, this is an intelligent young woman who is going to learn this role. She didn't have foreign policy experience as a governor, but she's going to learn this role and do it well, and I believe she has. I really do. As I said, it might surprise some of your listeners for me to say that. And when she said, I am not confused, you know, I applaud it. For goodness sakes, I'm sure she wasn't confused. I mean, she's a thoughtful person. Her views toward Russia are views I share. Putin only understands strength. We have to let him know that if he's going to step over the line, as he's done in Ukraine, as he did here in the United States when he invaded the voter rolls of the state of Illinois, there's a price to pay. So three cheers for Nikki Haley. I think she was right. I don't think there was any confusion there. I think the president might have changed his mind on her. Whatever the background, she said the right thing.
I know you got to run, but Mitch McConnell getting in the way of protecting the special prosecutor, how big a problem is that?
Well, this, you know, let's get down to the bottom line here. This is a criminal investigation. It is one that has followed the book. It is underway. I know Bob Mueller. He is not a showboat. He is not having press conferences. He's trying to stop leaks. He's moving forward. 19 people, I believe, have faced indictment already. It's serious-minded. And if there's any effort to interfere with this, I think it is, in fact, an obstruction of justice. You know, Mitch McConnell has kind of weaseled on this. At first, he sounded good. Then he said, maybe I won't take up the bill to protect the special prosecutor. We should protect the integrity of a basic principle that no one, absolutely no one in America, including the president, is above the law.
And this isn't just Trump. Future presidents shouldn't have the power to do that either. So it's a law that makes sense.
They absolutely shouldn't. I mean, this is a credible criminal investigation. It ought to be completed. I trust Mueller. If he comes to the end of it and says, I don't think Trump did anything wrong, President Trump did anything wrong, I'll stand by him, even though I may have personal disagreement, but I respect him for a thorough investigation. If he comes down the other way, I'm going to respect him as well.
I appreciate the time. As always, I'll leave you with this, and you can take this to the Hill today. A 630 texter says, just curious, does Trump have a hotel in the DMZ?
Well, it's not exactly a vacation spot either.
Right, but if there's a place to stay, enjoy your day, Senator.
Thanks, Steve. See you.